is Age of Treason Radio. With your host, Tan Stoffel. Transreality. We're going to compare and contrast two recent controversies, one involving Bruce Jenner and the other involving Rachel Dolezal. And of course, we're also going to discuss what this all has to do with the Jews. The two controversies revolve around the same core issue, the poisonous concept of fluidity, which is an extension of identity politics, which is itself an extension of the constantly metastasizing Jewish intellectual movement known as cultural Marxism or multiculturalism. Fluidity is the idea that individuals have a right to choose who they are, to be what they want to be, that social considerations or even physical biological realities are not or should not be any real constraint. It's the idea that what you think and believe and imagine you are matters more than anything else. This idea of fluidity is part of a larger social context in which integration, mixing, blurring, diversity, anything degenerate, really, is put forth by cultural and political elites as right and good, and thus something that can be and has been compelled by force. Meanwhile, anything separate, homogeneous, with clear borders, anything necessary for the continuity and survival of a people, really, is portrayed as wrong and even evil, and thus can and has been targeted for destruction. Such an abstract and objective description is really just the universalist sugarcoating over a deeper fraud, a misrepresentation or misinterpretation of the racial animus that's behind multiculturalism, driving it all. The driving force and its goals are not at all universalist, but are utterly particularist. It's really all about tearing down and destroying anything and everything European or white. It's about marching through the institutions created and formerly dominated by whites, now dominated by Jews, and using those positions of authority to denounce whites, to make the world safe for the Jews first and foremost. Clouding the issue is the fact that the Jewish nature of this aggression has all along been largely disguised, cloaked by the earlier promotion and preeminence of liberalism, particularly secularism, individualism, and pluralism. The aggression has advanced most recently under the pretense of promoting freedom and tolerance and equality for everyone, even as the efforts have become ever more especially and obviously to secure special preferences and privileges for various minorities, and are accompanied by ever shriller condemnations of white supremacy, white privilege, and whites generally. Identity politics is only superficially about everyone having and celebrating their unique identities equally. Behind the facade, it's a thoroughly Jewish construct. It's about Jews with a solid Jewish identity and racial animus for whites, spinning a historic narrative of their own victimhood and oppression by whites. Jews and their Holocaust narrative are at the absolute center, serving as a template, defining and driving a larger coalition of narrowly self-interested deviants, degenerates, feminists, and non-white people of color, inciting and uniting and directing them against whites, and especially white heterosexual men. So it's against this cultural backdrop that we have, in the first instance, this idea of fluid gender in the spotlight, focused at the moment on Bruce Jenner, a famous white man, an Olympic gold medal winner, married 3 times, father of 4 children. Jenner declared that he had long wished he was a woman and had finally resolved that he would undergo surgery to make himself look more like one physically. He then appeared on the cover of Vanity Fair magazine, dressed in a women's swimsuit, sporting breast implants, long hair, and makeup. The caption read, "Call me Caitlin." The new name Jenner had selected for himself, and the Jews media celebrated. Unfortunately, most of us have heard of this kind of sexual deviance before. Transsexuals, trannies, the T in LGBT. But Jenner's fame and the Jews media's hoopla took the already toxic contemporary popular culture to a whole new level of bizarre. What's new about transgenderism is that it goes beyond tolerating a mentally deranged individual's desire to be something they're not. And it has become a metric by which everyone else's value is measured by their willingness to say that they approve of behavior that should repulse anyone healthy and normal. Abnormal and unhealthy are the new normal and healthy. Late last week, the other current controversy sprang up, this one around a relatively unknown local leader of a black political organization named Rachel Dolezal. The initial report concerned her claim that she was a victim of hate, her 8th or 9th such complaint in as many years. This time around, she claimed she had received a letter whose contents she found offensive, pictures of nooses or whatever. This time it was also most certainly a hoax, since the letter was supposedly received at a post office box that only herself and her staff had access to, and yet its stamp had not been canceled, signifying that it had not actually been handled by anyone at the post office. The Jews media regularly announces hate crimes and almost as regularly, but more quietly and ambiguously, announce the corresponding hoaxes when the supposed victims actually turn out to be the perpetrators. What made the Dolezal story stand out was the revelation soon afterward that she had all along been hoaxing her blackness, that she was in fact a white woman who had simply frizzed up her hair, darkened her skin, and passed herself off as black. In Dolezal's case, the spotlight is shining on trans race now, the fluidity of race. Coming so soon after the celebratory circus the Jews media had made about Jenner, the glaring similarity of their bizarre pretense is easy to see. It's easy to mock. A glaring contrast is also clear. The Jews media, which hailed Caitlyn Jenner, has been either ambivalent or disapproving about Rachel Dolezal. The most common theme is an irrational insistence that the two situations are completely different. The size, swiftness, and character of the public response on social media has been telling in its own way. However relentless and pervasive the Jewish promotion of the lie that neither race nor gender are rooted in biology, it is a lie, and many people aren't buying it. The general consensus, in social media for sure, but even in the Jews media to a certain extent, is that Dolezal is a fraud, and she can't possibly be black because she has no black ancestors. In other words, when it comes to racial identity, genes are the decisive factor. What Dolezal's case demonstrates is that you can feel black, marry black, go to a black school, dedicate your life to serving blacks. You can look and act, and you might even be mistaken as black. But none of that can actually make you black. For that, you have to have black ancestors. The case is similar for Jenner, though the Jews media treats it as though it's different. Despite Jenner's surgery, he'll never really be a woman. The Jews media hype about him will in fact make it less likely that he will ever be able to sincerely fool anyone. just like Dolezal, now that she's been outed. There are a few articles about these controversies that I'd like to cite, read excerpts from, and comment on, tying them into and adding a bit to what I've just said. However tempting it may be to simply disregard what's happening, as many people do, and chalk it up to insanity, the overarching point I'd like to make is that there is some sense that can be made of this if we read between the lines. Paul McHugh, the former psychiatrist in chief of Johns Hopkins Hospital, wrote an article about Jenner titled "Transgenderism, a Pathogenic Meme," published on a website called Public Discourse. I think it was the day before the Dolezal story broke. McHugh noted that what is today called transgenderism used to be a rare phenomena, but has dramatically increased in recent years. He attributes this pathological behavior, as mental unrest, and attributes its spread to the spread of a pathogenic meme. He writes, "The champions of this meme, encouraged by their alliance with the broader LGBT movement, claim that whether you are a man or a woman, a boy or a girl, is more of a disposition or feeling about yourself than a fact of nature. And much like other feelings, it can change any time and for all sorts of reasons." Skipping ahead a bit. "But the meme that your sex is a feeling, not a biological fact, and can change at any time, marches on through our society. In a way, it's reminiscent of the Hans Christian Andersen tale, The Emperor's New Clothes. In that tale, the emperor, believing that he wore an outfit of special beauty imperceptible to the rude or uncultured, paraded naked through his town to the huzzas of courtiers and citizens anxious about their reputations. Many onlookers to the contemporary transgender parade, knowing that a disfavored opinion is worse than bad taste today, similarly fear to identify it as a misapprehension. I am ever trying to be the boy among the bystanders who points to what's real. I do so not only because truth matters, but also because overlooked amid the hoopla, enhanced now by Bruce Jenner's celebrity and Annie Leibovitz's photography, stand many victims. 10 to 15 years after surgical reassignment, the suicide rate of those who had undergone sex reassignment surgery rose to 20 times that of comparable peers." Emperor's clothes, indeed. But even McHugh's truth-telling here is couched in semantically correct compassion for the most botched. The suicides are only the tip of the iceberg. The bulk of the harm is being done to the many more otherwise healthy men and women whose minds are more subtly poisoned by this pathogenic transgender meme, and who as a consequence will never form a proper family and thus probably never reproduce. McHugh does at least try to identify the source and the driving force. He notes that, quote, "both the state and federal governments are actively seeking to block any treatments that can be construed as challenging the assumptions and choices of transgendered youngsters." Furthermore, he goes on to say, "the larger issue is the meme itself. The idea that one's sex is fluid and a matter open to choice runs unquestioned through our culture and is reflected everywhere in the media, the theater, the classroom, and in many medical clinics. It has taken on cult-like features, its own special lingo, internet chat rooms providing slick answers to new recruits, and clubs for easy access to dresses and styles supporting the sex change. It is doing much damage to families, adolescents, and children, and should be confronted as an opinion without biological foundation wherever it emerges. But gird your loins, if you would confront this matter. Hell hath no fury like a vested interest masquerading as a moral principle." McHugh's diagnosis of transgenderism dovetails very well with Kevin McDonald's description of the Jewish culture of critique. A comparable diagnosis surely applies to transracialism. At the very center of the moral fury in both cases is the Jewish Holocaust narrative. Another psychologist commented and was quoted in an article at people.com titled, "Psych Expert, Rachel Dolezal Not Like Caitlyn Jenner." The author of that article claimed that most people think Jenner and Dolezal have very little in common. But she wrote, "Some commenters on the internet liken Dolezal to someone who is transracial." And she writes transracial in quotes and sneer quotes. To explain how very different transracial is from transgender, she quotes a racial identity expert who says, "I would say being LGBTQ, there is strong evidence that there is a biological reason behind it. Caitlyn Jenner is not identifying with being a woman because of the upbringing and cultural conditioning." This expert's opinion is directly at odds with what McHugh described as the pathogenic meme that's behind transgenderism. Quote, "the idea that sex is a feeling, not a biological fact," unquote. And I think McHugh's view is far more credible for reasons I'll describe in a bit. Concerning the problematic internet comments connecting transgender to transracial, the expert says, "I think the comparison is all an attempt to not really see the issue. The issue is deception, honesty, and pretense. You have to get to the bottom of that." Now, the expert is referring here to the Jews media talking point that's popping up in many places now, that the big difference between with Dolezal and Jenner is that Dolezal is a fraud and dishonest. And the reality is that Jenner, if he's telling the truth now, has admitted that he's been lying to his friends and his family for a much longer time. The reality is that the idea that gender is not essentially biological is just as false as the idea that race is not essentially biological. Both ideas are a very deliberate deception. As McHugh puts it, anyone who confronts the deception faces fury. The issue here is honesty, says the quote, racial identity expert. The name of this expert, according to the article, is Derald Wing Sue. The article fails to identify Sue as a professional, non-white, anti-white. But as his Wikipedia page describes, Sue was born in Portland, Oregon to a Chinese-American family. He lived in a predominantly white neighborhood with his parents, four brothers and one sister, where he was reportedly bullied and teased on a regular basis due to his race, which later influenced his studies in cross-cultural counseling. Two individuals who influenced Sue's path of study were Malcolm X and Martin Luther King Jr. Skipping ahead a bit, it turns out he was the first president of the Asian American Psychological Association. And skipping still further ahead, it says Sue's ethnic minority status was his biggest influence in pushing for multiculturalism in psychology. What's more, this Asian teaches the pathogenic meme known as white privilege. It's the explicit premise of a presentation that's available on the internet that he authored, titled, "What Does It Mean to Be White?" It describes how he did some research that sounds like a stripped-down version of the Whiteness Project that I wrote about back in November of 2014. In academia, the word whiteness is a deception. What it really describes is anti-whiteness. So the whiteness project was actually the anti-whiteness project. When this Chinaman asks whites what whiteness means to them, they mostly claimed that they didn't know or that they didn't care. They were visibly disturbed and agitated by the question. He also asked non-whites, and they revealed that they were simpatico with his white privilege meme. That they saw whites as oblivious to their quote-unquote privilege, and that they think white means being able to always be right, never having to explain yourself, and never having to apologize. The fact that a racial alien who has not only demonstrated his anti-white animus, but is actually paid to do so, is called upon by the Jews media to comment on the behavior of white people in any way whatsoever is a good sign that whites do not have any tangible political power, never mind privilege. Another article was actually a statement from the NAACP shortly after Dolezal was outed. And their statement was brief, but there's one paragraph I want to read from it. One's racial identity is not a qualifying criteria or disqualifying standard for NAACP leadership. The NAACP remains committed to securing political, educational, and economic justice for all people, and we encourage Americans of all stripes to become members and serve as leaders in our organization. This is more deception. This is a good example of a more or less explicitly particularist organization trying to cloak itself and its policies with universalist sounding rhetoric. What the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People is claiming here is that it doesn't discriminate against anyone who is willing to help them advance black interests. On Monday, Dolezal herself announced her resignation from the NAACP. She made no apologies and instead reiterated her commitment to, quote, human rights, unquote, and advancing black interests. Dave Chappelle, a black who has made a career out of joking about race, was serious about Dolezal. He said, the world's become ridiculous, he told an awestruck grads at George Washington University. There's a white lady posing as a black lady. There is not one thing that woman accomplished that she couldn't have done as a white woman. There's no reason. I think this reflects the poisonous effect that white privilege propaganda has even on blacks. They see even a deranged white like Dolezal as golden simply because she's white. The false assumption is that whites have even one university that teaches a positive view of our race, or even one organization that can provide us with a stable career working for the advancement of our race. The truth is that Dolezal's anti-white career was, materially speaking at least, far easier for her to pursue and more lucrative than any pro-white career would have been. The race-based storm that she says she experienced for a few days and couldn't take is a taste of what she would have faced on a regular basis as a white woman openly trying to advocate for the advancement of her own race out of an office in Spokane. The New York Times, the belly of the Jews media beast, ran an article titled "Black or White? Woman's Story Stirs Up a Furor." Faking a racial history in either direction raises difficult questions about what race is and why it matters, and about the assumptions people make. Jim Crow laws often imposed a one-drop rule so that people with even a sliver of black ancestry, no matter how white they appeared, were legally considered black. It is only because of that history that Ms. Dozal could be accepted as black, said Martha A. Sandweiss, a history professor at Princeton University. Quote, there was very little to be gained by identifying yourself as black, so if you did, no one questioned it, unquote, said Mrs. Sandweiss, author of Passing Strange, an acclaimed book about a man who did just that in the late 19th century. Quote, it shows how absurd racial classifications often are, unquote. What the Dolezal incident clearly demonstrates is that there is something to gain and that there's a new one-drop rule. No matter how black you appear, you need at least a sliver of black ancestry. So far as I know, the current anti-white regime has squelched or avoided any legal challenge of this. Dolezal herself sued Howard University when she was there for discrimination against her as a white woman. She lost that case. Martha Sandweiss is another one of these deceptive experts on race. In fact, it appears she's transracial, like Dolezal, but different in an important way. From what I can tell, she's actually a Jewess who's posing as white. Like the Chinaman expert, her expertise, her profession, is in being critical of whites. There was an article about her in the Princeton Alumni Weekly in 2009 with a title based on her Jews Media acclaimed book, Passing Strange, a Gilded Age tale of love and deception across the color line. American Renaissance reprinted it under the title A Strange Double Life. The Jewess's double life as white went unmentioned. But I'd like to quote a few paragraphs from that article. If this story reminds readers of The Human Stain, Philip Roth's novel about a half-black, half-white man passing as white and Jewish, you're not alone. Sandweiss thought of it frequently during the 4.5 years she spent writing Passing Strange, especially with the number of times she had to fill in historical blanks. Quote, that was absolutely an inspiration for this book. I admire that book so much, how Roth gets inside his characters' heads and imagines their motivations. Certainly, many times working on this book, I wished I was a novelist so I could narrate with the kind of magnificent omniscience what really goes on here. But I'm not a novelist, and I'm certainly not a brilliant novelist like Philip Roth. I'm a historian who lives and dies by her footnotes. This is a history book. Here's why the Jews media attitude toward the transracial idea is generally negative, even while their attitude toward transgender is positive. The Jews deliberately promote fluidity of both race and gender, but the fluidity of race is of more critical importance to their parasitic lifestyle. Promoting a certain one-way belief in the fluidity of race helps enable Jewish infiltration and manipulation of their hosts. The promotion of gender fluidity comes later as part of the exploitation and parasitic castration of their hosts. Naturally, Jews are interested in racial identity and passing, and thus they set themselves up as authorities on these subjects. They think deeply about these things, but they don't want their hosts thinking too deeply about it. Last week, Andrew Joyce published a good article following up and expanding on a point I took issue with a few months ago in Gaslighting. In his article titled Jews, Communists, and Genocidal Hate in Whiteness Studies, Joyce examines not just Joel Ignatieff, but the Jewy clique around him. It doesn't directly address gender or race fluidity, but it does at least identify the Jewish source and the driving force behind these poisonous anti-white memes. Joyce writes at one point, The opening pursuance of, quote, whiteness studies, unquote, the open pursuance of, quote, whiteness studies, unquote, must be perceived as nothing less than an act of extreme, even violent, aggression against the white race. Joyce gets a little less coherent toward the end of his article when he tries to tie it in with his previous description of white pathology and suicide, when he writes, "One major factor facilitating this ethnically suicidal behavior is the ongoing Jewish domination of academia and the constant mutation of what may loosely be termed Frankfurt School ideologies into superficially novel intellectual movements. There is really nothing novel at all about, quote, whiteness studies, unquote. It is simply the latest guise for the radical critique of white culture and all Talmudic logic about race as a construct aside, the active promotion of white genocide. The hypocrisy of the Jewish architects of, quote, whiteness studies, unquote, is evident and made clear in their total lack of identification with whites and in the very strong identification with Jewish culture and group interests. It is tragic, a criminal in fact, that this corrupt cabal of ethnic activists and dysfunctional communist wannabe Jews has hijacked positions on faculty, has obtained access to elite publishing outlets, and with it, significant power and influence over culture. The second factor at play in the success of, quote, whiteness studies, unquote, is the ongoing problem of white pathology. One side of white pathology is altruism toward other races. The even more insidious side is the tendency towards self-hate. Now, even according to the details of his own description of the non-Jews who were involved, he calls them wannabe Jews, it's really the same single factor, a Jewish intellectual movement. I find it frustrating that a mainstream figure like McGew won't mention the Jews, but will at least identify the ideas that Jews promote as pathogenic, whereas Joyce will bluntly identify the Jews and what they're doing, but still talks about the pathological behavior of whites as if it's something separate. To conclude here, the basic gist of what I'm getting at this time, which bears repeating, is that abnormal is the new normal. Transreality is a Jewish construct. Now, more clearly than ever before in history, the problem is Jewish rule. The fact is that Jews are so powerful and privileged that hardly anyone in any position of power dares to openly challenge them or any of their cultural or moral dictates, no matter how obviously destructive. When supposed leaders and pundits aren't snickering nervously, mocking conspiracy theories about the Jews, they're loudly proclaiming their respect and admiration for the Jews as a group, as a people, and denouncing anyone who doesn't as the enemy, as literally evil. It's more bizarre, really, than even these controversies around Jenner and Dolezal. My point is that Jews clearly use their influence in media and academia to define and promote pathogenic memes. The fluidity of gender and race are just two prominent examples. They do this because it's good for the Jews. They benefit from the almost anything goes atmosphere they create. In particular, they are the foremost practitioners of transracialism. They've used it throughout their history, not just recently, and not only to infiltrate and manipulate white hosts.